Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast. It's a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have new ideas to help our economy grow. The Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. It serves scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which contribute to this programme. We're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. It also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and today I'm joined and presenting with my colleague Josh Mason. Both our guests are down the line today. We've got Ian Balderson, who's Innovation Director at Oxford Innovation Space, and Donna James, Research Director at Popular Select. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah,
Josh,
great to be here.
We've had a busy week in business.
We have. Recognition PR. We have indeed.
And I kick off with stuff I've been working on. I invited the National Economist and Sunday Telegraph commentator, Liam Halligan, to the north of England, to the northeast, and showed him around some of the interesting things that are going on. We showed him about a company that's wanting to refine lithium. We showed him a company that's making parts for nuclear submarines. We showed him a company that's making robots that help with fruit picking. And we had a lunch with a range of businesses that are investing real money in the economy. And it was very interesting to hear what he had to say.
So what's his take? What does he think the direction is? We're hearing a lot of conflicting stuff just now, aren't we?
Well, I think the point he made was the government itself is in conflict, because at one hand, it really, really wants to push ahead with growth, and no one can doubt its ambition in that way. But on the other hand, there are a couple of policies that may restrict growth. The overall policy of having to introduce more tax, the announcement that Rachel Reeves has sort of made through the media in the last few days about maybe extending borrowing. On extending borrowing, Liam Halligan was saying, well, you're not going to get more interest rate cuts, and you're going to be asking for a lot more money from investors to help the government, when actually investors maybe want to be investing in businesses. Talking about the city. And he also said, of course, and I picked this up talking to other businesses, that some of the employment law stuff, which hasn't been published yet as we speak, it will be later this week, might be putting people off hiring. So he was downbeat about an interest rate cut. He was downbeat about investment, saying that there was a lot on pause. And he was pointing out that some companies aren't employing. So it was... it wasn't that upbeat, but he was upbeat in seeing what we were doing in the northeast.
So it's all to play for on the 30th of October.
It certainly is. It certainly
all
is.
To play for.
And what about you? What have you been doing?
Well, at risk of sounding like a character in the Fast Show, Graham, this week I have mostly been thinking about resilience, which is definitely a growth sector in the UK economy. There's a number of emerging global threats to British business. You know, in the last sort of 6 months or so, we've had cyber threats against high street banks and supermarkets and the NHS. We had yesterday the head of MI5 warning about the scale of threat that the UK is facing. And increasingly, a lot of businesses are working in this market. Services generally. So last week I was in Northern Ireland talking to a whole group of people who are very interested in this and what the how we are as a country, but how the business community is supporting preparedness in the events of all sorts of things.
And there are business. I mean, we've got cybersecurity businesses, people advising on employment policies so that people can work from home if need be. We've also got resilience companies that are in the defence sector looking at things like, I know there's one in the northeast that does radioactive detection. We've got companies like Arqiva, the people that do the broadcast transmission. You know, can you pick up the radio in the case of an emergency? Does it all rely on the internet? And, you know, you're right. A couple of months ago, a lot of shops were hit by a Saturday afternoon cyber attack. And you and I were talking about how much money do we have on us? And I'm very old-fashioned. I always get £100 out of the bank and put it in my wallet to last the week. And if I've still got 20 quid, I get £80. And if I still got 40 quid, I get 60. And I always start the week with 100 quid. And as a result, when Sainsbury's, as it was hit by that cyber attack a couple of months ago, I very smugly walked in because they said, cash only, cash only.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that. I am what some people call, rather derogatorily, a prepper. In as much as I always make sure that I have enough food, water,
wine
in the house at all times to last for 3 days in the event of something diabolical happening.
3 days.
3 days, 3 days. I pray that it won't happen, but you never know, and it's better to be safe than sorry.
I'm going to talk to Donna about the economy in a minute, but Ian, can I ask you, how much cash have you got on you, mate?
20.
Did you say 20 or 20?
20.
20 quid. 20 quid. Yeah. It wouldn't get you through 3 days, 20 quid, though, if you couldn't...
It's left over from the first 100.
Yeah, yeah. I was in London last week and I couldn't spend any cash because none of the coffee shops would take cash. What about you, Donna? Do you have cash in your handbag?
I've got £20, but that's unusual. I usually have none.
None?
Wow.
So we are. None. So it is an interesting point. Now, Donna, if you don't mind, I want to talk to you first. I was talking with Liam Halligan. We met lots of businesses visiting the northeast of England last couple of days. And you're in a recruitment. Popular Select is a very specialist kind of group of people. It does recruit. But in the general, a lot of these businesses were saying, we're not hiring. It wasn't that they didn't have the jobs. It was that they were fearing future regulation, which hasn't yet been made known.
I think that is a trend we have seen. I mean, things have been slow in general, 2024 compared to 2023. We've definitely seen a slowdown late summer. And I think that's for a variety of reasons, but anticipating the budget is definitely a reason for the slowdown in hiring. We've also seen the region's unemployment rate go up by 1.4% since the last quarter. So that's not great. Inactivity has gone down slightly, but both way above the national average. Things are not booming, let's put it that way.
So what's your observation, Josh? Well, you've got a large client base. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, as Donna says, there's a lot of anticipation about what's going to happen on 30th of October. Mm. And if the mood music is right, we are going to see some taxes go up, maybe things like national insurance, maybe some...
That's employer national insurance.
Employer national insurance, which, of course, isn't necessarily great for jobs. But what we might also see, because of some of this tinkering that we're hearing about with the borrowing powers and the way they borrow money, we might see some quite significant investment. And we often hear, don't we, Donna, you know, these grand government infrastructure and investment programs. Last week, the government announced this ginormous carbon capture and storage project. And these things always come with these very exciting jobs figures attached. But what do you think? Do those jobs actually materialise?
They do. Some of them are temporary, mm-hmm. The construction phase and so on and so forth. But that's good for the so-called MEPS jobs. And we've got some great companies in the region that will take advantage of that. And all the technology going into that that industry, a subsection of construction. My worry as a labour market specialist is where all the skills are going to come from. And, you know, if you look at the Case STEM report 2023, we've got an ongoing shortage of STEM skills. And they say it costs $1.5 billion a year. But it's where we're going to get these people from when we've got stickiness in relocation around the regions, and huge stickiness for people coming into the country with visa costs having risen so much, with people not being able to, graduate researchers not being able to bring their family. All sorts of things making recruiting that really specialised talent difficult.
Okay, well, Donna, that's an interesting observation, and it is about now. That's a very contemporary issue. Can I just ask you to cast your mind forward and to think about the current way in which younger people are trained that would look at that skills gap in the future? Now, as I understand it, larger employers have this apprenticeship levy, but they don't have to pay the apprenticeship levy if they can prove that they are training employees themselves to certain levels. That's right, isn't it?
That's correct. I think the whole apprenticeship scheme does need to be simplified. We have so many, and they're so narrow. And that, you know, you may disagree, but on a meta level, the bureaucracy is absolutely horrendous. Too many governing bodies, too many fingers in the pie. For SMEs, it's very difficult. The amount of admin and red tape that they encounter when trying to take on an apprentice. We have the other side, which is careers guidance. And I have a big B in my bonnet about careers guidance and how it's provided, who it's provided to, and by whom. We need far more scientists taking on the challenge of being careers guidance specialists.
I definitely agree. Let's put Ian on screen as well. We'll bring him in a moment. Can I just, before I bring you in, Ian, just ask you the one thing about the reason I was asking about larger companies and the apprenticeship levy. I, as I said to you, at the beginning of this week, I visited several larger companies, one of which was in a major fabrication zone. It was making heavy engineering, and it had its own training academy. Effectively, it had taken the decision not to pay the apprenticeship levy, but to do it itself. And another smaller fabrication engineering firm, actually in South Yorkshire, which is deciding to bring young people on as apprentices and give them special projects for now. They're helping restore a Vulcan bomber, for instance.
Oh, wow.
And it seems to me that these, particularly in this engineering sector, some of these companies have just said, well, I'm not into asking the government for help anymore. We're going to do it ourselves. We won't pay the levy.
Yeah, well, that sounds familiar to me, because they can just get on with it. They can do what they need to do and train people to do their jobs. Now, I have to say that for many SMEs, they will worry about the investment and whether they get a return on that investment with young people being trained up and then moving on, because they'll be big ticket people having been trained.
Ian, we've got to bring you in. You've heard some general, so I want to hear all about your project in a minute. But just picking up on some of the things Donna has said, do you recognise any of those things, or are we being a bit gloomy?
I think there's a lot of lack of understanding out there with SMEs over access into apprentice schemes and various different guises, utilising universities, for example. I've done that before in my past, where actually supporting universities to use students, whether it's PhD students, master's students, to support your business, but actually support them in topics around helping them to write their dissertations and giving them thesis to write. I think generally speaking, there is, most SMEs don't know where to go. And I think that's a big problem that we have within the UK government setup, is business support is lacking out there, and a clarity of avenue for whatever the need is for that particular business. And I that's something certainly that I'm working on to help within the area that I'm in, for example.
Jenna, Ian, I've got to say to you, what you've just said, we're going to have to talk about this at our firm, because we regularly give internships. We pay the intern for 4 weeks in the summer. But maybe that's just a stick-on. what you're basically saying is get your relationship with your university earlier in a student's career, university education path, and get yourself wedded in. Bring them in on a project.
Absolutely. It's something that I'll be encouraging the businesses that join us in Oxford Innovation. And because people don't, they're simply just not aware that those different schemes and facilities are out there. And it does lead into apprentice schemes as well. So you've got that nice journey over, it could be an internship, it could be a temporary internship, which is just to support studies and topics and research sessions right through into an apprentice scheme.
Now, Ian, we don't know enough. I'm going to let Josh ask you some questions in a minute, but we do need to hear a little bit about the Wellsprings, what it's all about, where it is, what the offer is.
Well, I'm going back home into the Wellsprings. So the Wellsprings is a building in Bolton, and quite a famous old building. And Bolton Council have converted the building into access for micros and SMEs. To be able to utilise really cool office space with business support. So the building itself ranges from co-working, drop-in facilities, two floors of office space ranging from 2 to 15 people. It's very much geared towards a facility that has not previously really existed in the Bolton area. And it forms part of their regeneration program over bringing more residents into the town centre itself and therefore giving them places to work. Now, the bit that's unique about the Wellsprings and what we do at Oxford Innovation Space is it's backed by business support, which is what I do. So myself as the Innovation Director, my role is to support every single business that is resident within the Wellsprings. And that can be from anything through to, it could be a startup, to help them to business plan, to help them to guide that journey through the business that they're going to be going through, right through to access to funding, grants, investments, or standardized banking facilities, etc., which is also my background. So there is a group of us around the UK. We've got, I think the Wellsprings will be our 34th site around the UK. So we are the largest in doing what we do. And then there is a team of myself, which all have a different skill set and a different background. And we tap into each other. So, for example, we have marketing specialists. So not just people that understand marketing. These are innovation directors that actually run a marketing company. And
fantastic.
Do the Oxford Innovation bit as not as a side, but it's a way of offering their expertise into a business community.
Josh, it sounds like you rent an office and you get a business coach.
Yeah, it sounds exactly.
You do, yeah. Right. So it is very much coaching. It's not a one-off hit. It is an ongoing support level right throughout. And the whole point is, it might not be us that actually give that advice, but it's about having that connectivity into all the different areas. And some of those will be into government areas to be able to direct the business into the right way.
And how is it going, Ian? How does it work in practice? Are you having success stories? Is it working?
In the Wellsprings, we've not even opened yet.
So, no, but in general, you said this is one of 39.
It's been going for 30 years. And the problem with it is it's not well known and it's not replicated amongst, I guess, other like-for-like organisations that simply do offer space. So where they're the only ones that ultimately do that. So we're very well recognised. It's a really lovely story. Our goal is to help that business to grow. And that could be a one-person business that grows into a 5, into a 10, maybe ends up moving off and they're employing 1,000 people. We actually welcome and encourage people to move away because they've grown.
Yeah, that makes sense. But Josh was asking about how it's going, but are there other locations in the north of England, or is this your first entry into the north?
No, we are in other areas in the north of England. So very strong around the Greater Manchester area. So we actually have two sites over in Stockport. One is an inherited site, and the other was brand new, similar to the Wellsprings from last year, which is in Merseyway. We have a place in Ashton as well, and we're looking at more sites dotted around the north of England.
When we're doing the looking at office accommodation, our business is relatively mature. It's been going 30 plus years, so we bought an office at our firm. But the early days, it was one of, when I was setting up, one of the most stressful things, worrying about covering the rent. And I had a little office in a terraced house next to a graveyard. And great place. It was 50 quid a week. I'll never forget it. 50 quid a week. And I always used to worry about paying the rent. But the real thing that caused me to worry is that I signed a 3-year lease for 50 quid a week. And oh my goodness, if it goes wrong, I've still got to pay all these. And it was but you're easy in, easy out, are you? What's the minimum?
Absolutely. So office, for example, is a year contract with a 3-month get out.
Right.
If that's what somebody wants. So we don't tie anybody into long-term deals, but it also builds in that flexibility around a flexi package. If there's more and more people that they might just work from home, but it's great to get out of the house and actually have access to that level of support. So we do a flexi package where people can just come and pay per day or pay for a monthly, have access to me, but still only pay a day rate as and when they're turning up. So how that would work is you would pay a membership into the organization, which gives you access to the business support and the ability to be able to drop in whenever you want. But the reality is you might only drop in one day a week because that's what suits you, for example.
And you mentioned the idea of bringing people back to town centres and improving football and things. I mean, there's a lot of that happening in Bolton at the minute, isn't there?
Yes.
More widely. How are you contributing to that? And is this replicated across your other sites in town centre areas? Are they...
So we're in town centres. Tend to not be in city centres. They tend to be around more surrounding a city, like they are in Greater Manchester, so focusing more on the towns and the city. That's not to say that we wouldn't go into a city. It's about what is right for the client, who is the owner, effectively, and us as operators, effectively.
It's all ground up stuff.
I don't think that's right. I mean, but you can actually make a good business by being in secondary markets. Our long-standing client, Duncan Bannatyne, started his health club business. He did actually have a care home business. And he chose deliberately secondary markets where there was no competition from glamorous health clubs with fluffy towels and gold caps. That's how it worked. So I think secondary markets is a good way to go. Well, look, can I just invite you both to give your website addresses out? And thank you very much for taking part. Ian, first, if people want to take part and look at your premises in Bolton and also the parts of the north, where should they look?
Yeah, if you take a look at ours, first of all, which is wellspringsbolton.co.uk, and then you've got links off to all the other areas that you may want to have a look at, and take a look at those flexible packages and what the business support offers. I think that's the unique bit. That's the USP.
And Donna, you are looking to help businesses, particularly in science and engineering, to find these very difficult to find people. How do they get in touch with you?
They can call us on 01325 488 518, or they can look us up on our website, which is www.populousselect.com with double S in the middle. And we also do more easy to find roles in science, technology, and engineering. Come and have a talk to us.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
Great. We're getting decent guests on this programme, aren't we?
We certainly are.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Northern Business Podcast. And if you want to be a guest, feel free to get in touch. Get in touch with me, Graham Robb, on LinkedIn, or Josh Mason on LinkedIn, or Recognition PR on LinkedIn. Thanks to our podcast producer, Harry Sinclair, and our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time, but don't miss an episode. Like, rate, and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.